Hi, everyone. You're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm your host, Alex Gerlach, and today I'm bringing you the next episode in our series on antibody-drug conjugates and HER2 breast cancer. In this segment, our experts talk about current and emerging antibody-drug conjugates in HER2-negative and HER2-low metastatic breast cancer, and they'll also share insights about how pharmacists can help guide sequencing decisions with ADC therapies. So, without further ado, let's pass it over to our experts.
Well, we are going to move into our second topic, which is focusing on current and emerging antibody drug conjugate therapies in HER2 negative and HER2 low metastatic breast cancer. So, Dr. Taraba, could you walk through the antibody drug conjugate therapies that are currently approved for hormone receptor positive and HER2 negative or low and triple negative breast cancer?
Sure, absolutely. So the first one I'll touch on is the trastuzumab deruxtecan, or the TDXD. And as Dr. Hunter alluded to previously, we have a new indication just this week that came out. So in those hormone receptor positive, HER2 low, that includes IHC 1+ or 2+ ish negative, or as Dr. Moore, I think you mentioned earlier, those HER2 ultra low patients with breast cancer that have progressed on one or more endocrine therapies in the metastatic setting. The other one, sacituzumab govitecan, approved in patients both with HR positive, HER2 negative, with unresectable locally advanced or metastatic hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative. And this includes the IHC 0, 1+, 2+ ish negative breast cancer in those patients that have received endocrine-based therapies and at least 2 additional systemic therapies in the metastatic setting. And this is the only one that is approved for triple negative breast cancer. So in patients that have received 2 or more prior systemic therapies, at least one of those within the metastatic disease setting. And then the most recent one is the datopotamab deruxtecan, or DTXD, approved in patients, again, with that hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative, IHC 0, 1+, 2+-ish negative, who have received prior endocrine-based therapy and chemotherapy for unresectable or metastatic disease.
Awesome. So I think we have 3 good options currently on the market in terms of our antibody drug conjugates. And I think, you know, we certainly have discussed the indication and we'll delve into this a little bit more. But I think what we also know is that what often impacts treatment selection for many of our patients are the side effect profiles, the toxicities that we're managing for these patients. And that often contributes so much to the selection when we're thinking about which agents to use next. So Dr. Hill, what key differences in safety, specifically thinking about toxicity and adverse event profiles, have you seen between trastuzumab deruxtecan, sacituzumab govitecan, and datopotamab deruxtecan that you think are important, especially for pharmacists to understand?
Yes, of course. So we'll talk a little bit later on some of the more specific ADC side effects with each of the agents and which ones we think are the most important to consider. But as far as comparing maybe some of the more like general adverse events that we're seeing that kind of cross the board between all of the approved ADCs in the breast cancer space, I tend to see a good bit more nausea with TDXD than with SG. In my experience, they're both categorized as highly emetogenic, but in my experience, patients tend to have a little bit more of a difficult time with the nausea from TDXD than they do with SG. I'm adding olanzapine as a 4th agent more often with a TDXD patient than with an SG patient, whereas patients on SG, as Dr. DeMarco mentioned, that SN38 is not going to be all that surprising that we're seeing a lot more diarrhea with those patients than with our TDXD patients. And then with the neutropenia, I do see significantly more neutropenia with SG than with TDXD. And some of our upcoming discussion, we'll talk through some of the supportive care recommendations that we are following. And I definitely think that the significant neutropenia that we see with SG can impact how long patients are able to stay on therapy and can definitely lead to some significant supportive care recommendations. And I'll kind of pass it over to Dr. DeMarco to discuss how she sees Dato-DXd comparing with the first two agents.
Thank you, Dr. Hill. I completely agree with you. I think that the neutropenia and the diarrhea with SG are definitely more prominent than what we're going to see with Dato-DXd, kind of looking at the clinical trials. I think that fatigue seems to be common. And I mean, at this point in metastatic breast cancer, all of our patients are experiencing fatigue, but very high rates in the SG trial, about 60%. And I think 10% of that was maybe grade 3 and 4. So definitely something to think about. Especially when we're considering all of that diarrhea and neutropenia that they can see as well. Comparing SG to Dato-DXd with the same kind of Trop-2 target, the diarrhea and neutropenia was significantly less with Dato-DXd, but there were some new side effects that we saw that really none of the other ADCs in this space have right now. So stomatitis was in almost 60% of patients as well. And then also keratitis and dry eye. And I think that's a very new side effect for us in breast cancer. I can't think of anything else where we're seeing side effects like this. And I think that we are really going to have to monitor for that. And then just kind of thinking about ILD, it was pretty rare in the Dato-DXd trial, but they still have that same cytotoxic payload as T-DXd. So something to keep in mind when we're monitoring our patients.
Yeah, I think that was especially something interesting with Dato-DXd. You know, when we think about ILD with T-DXd, it's roughly 10 to 15%. It's one of the biggest things that we're monitoring for in our clinics, but that didn't quite translate over to Dato-DXd. It was less than 5% for that patient population, and I do think that is something that is really interesting and certainly sometimes can play into treatment decision making for patients that may have a history of ILD or significant pulmonary history. So fantastic! That was incredibly helpful. Dr. Hunter, what key factors do you think guide pharmacists in treatment sequencing decisions? You know, we've discussed how we now have these three agents available for metastatic breast cancer. When is ADC therapy typically introduced when you're thinking about the breast cancer treatment paradigm? But how are we sequencing these agents?
Absolutely. I think, of course, as we've talked about, the HER2 status of the patient and the hormone status of the patient are big factors when you think about who's gonna come up to bat first and who has an approval, if you will. I'm looking at SG maybe in your purely triple negative breast cancer patients, but also outside of like looking at the biomarkers, I'm looking at the patient themselves. Definitely do a baseline assessment, which I'll talk a little bit more about in our talk here today, but looking at a baseline assessment from a cardiac perspective, a pulmonary perspective, history, because I mean, with SG, as we talked about, the neutropenia, as Dr. Hill was saying, is something that we definitely have to address it. I mean, if you're working in breast cancer, you're given growth factors, you're like water, whether it's a long acting, a short acting. We're trying to get those growth factors in there. That's the only thing that's going to keep the patients on track. So that's something that actually does affect like our movement on how fast maybe an ADC shows up if we have a patient and we know has an established problem with holding their counts during their adjuvant treatment or with previous lines of chemotherapy. So I think the toxicity profile of the respective ADCs, and as we add Dato-DXd to the pot now having to maybe talking to my patients about how their eyes are these days, as we start this, but just making sure we're assessing the patient individually sometimes affects like what we do even on top of the guidelines or the data that we have currently available. And I'll pass it off to Dr. Saraba if she has anything else to add.
Sure. I think the question of when there are ADCs typically introduced became especially interesting this week, in that I think, as Dr. Hill alluded to previously, is we have usually exhausting our endocrine therapies initially, and then switching to capecitabine, and then typically we have switched to ADCs at that point. And I think, to the points that she brought up too, I think there'll be a lot of things that go into play as far as oral therapies, or patients willing to kind of make that transition at that point. But the data is in favor of the you know, the T-DXd prior to chemo. So I think it'll be interesting to see over these next few weeks to months how things play out and where we start using these therapies.
I completely agree with you. I think that, you know, the hot topic right now is how are we sequencing these drugs? And I think we all feel fairly confident in using T-DXd first line, considering sacituzumab after. But I'm really curious in terms of how are we going to implement Dato-DXd, because those patients were allowed to have a prior topoisomerase inhibitor. So I do think how we utilize that third agent, and if we're going to have developed resistance and efficacy that we see with those patients, I'm really curious to see how we utilize that now that we have it FDA approved.
Thanks for listening to this Pharmacy Times Peer Exchange segment about ADCs and breast cancer. Stay tuned for next week's episode, which will cover how emerging therapies and clinical trials inspire innovative approaches to treating HER2 breast cancer and real-world implementation of novel ADCs in practices. So take care, and I'll see you in the next one.